The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome to the AutJet Business Show. Every time I say that, I can't believe it's Thursday again. So welcome to the Thursday AutJet Business Show. And again, we've got an amazing guest with us this evening. It's Dolores Fouché. She's the owner of Food by Flavors. Good evening, Dolores.
Good evening. Thanks for having me here.
Great to
have
you.
It's nice to be in this seat because sometimes I'm in that seat.
Yeah. So Dolores says that because about once a month she comes and talks about food and interviews other people about food. So welcome to the other side.
Thank you.
And as you all know, I'd give a short little business story and then I'll introduce Dolores formally and then we'll go into the interview. So tonight's story is a little quote I saw that says, the quickest way to succeed is to start now and figure it out as you go. And then they said, you can't learn to drive while you're in the parking lot, or you can't learn to drive in a parked car. And the lesson behind that is, yes, you need to have plans and you need to have different business plans or have your cash flow or look at your strategy and all that kind of stuff. But at some stage, you need to stop analyzing and start doing. And there's that concept they talk about, analysis paralysis. An analysis paralysis is where you just carry on analyzing and analyzing and analyzing and you don't take it further. And what you got to do is look at what you're doing, or you start analyzing the market, what you're looking at. Then you say, what does it mean? And then what can I do about it? But the next step is where a lot of people don't go, is actually doing it. And in the pre-interview that I did with Dolores, just to find out a little bit about herself, it sounded like she just jumped in with both feet, didn't even know she was jumping into a swimming pool, and just did it. So the formal introduction is that, first of all, I'm thrilled to have this food. I think dynamo is the right word we can use.
It's too much. Though.
Is that too much? Okay. Yeah. She's been cooking up a storm for the community for at least the last 20 years. She's the owner of Food by Flavors. She actually comes from PE. And she's no stranger to hard work because, and she'll fill us in a little bit about this, but since the age of 12, she's been tackling and doing all sorts of odd jobs around. She then went and studied in Israel, and then she spent 15 years doing PR and advertising. But all the way through it, she said she loved cooking and people used to come and eat her meals. And when a friend basically begged her to cater for her kid's party, that one yes sparked the delight that we now have. She has 15 dedicated staff members and then other part-time members who come for the different functions. She creates a feast for all occasions. And my wife says that whenever she sees a Dolores function, it is a feast because there's so much food available. And what's more inspiring is that a lot of those leftovers, if they're leftovers, Dolores gives it to charity, spreading the love through every single dish that she makes. One of her dreams is to transform, as I gave in the intro just before the show, her cozy, her little place that she's got now making the stuff into a cozy coffee shop so that people can come and discuss and have coffee. And I'd love to come there one day.
Right.
Hopefully
You'll be first. You'll be first.
And we've had lots of guests on the show who have told us that the way to succeed is to have systems and procedures and to do the number crunching and understand your numbers to be successful. But Dolores has told me that she's done her business without that, proving that there's maybe one or there more than one recipe for success. So grab a seat at the table and let's learn from Dolores Fouché as she whips up the magic in the kitchen of life. So welcome, Dolores.
Thank you. That was very flattering. I feel, you know, as Golda Meir once said, you're not so great, don't be so humble. But yeah, I feel that that kind of painted a very illustrious picture, and it's I don't feel like I'm that, but thank you. Thank you.
That's great. So just take us back to the early days. I said that you've been working since the age of 12. You think back to the entrepreneurial spirit, and when you say you've always worked?
I think that so much of work comes from need, truly. So I didn't grow up very indulged, to put it that way. I grew up in a loving home, but with not much. And I always had to find my way. If I wanted to go to camp at the end of the year, I had to work towards that. There just wasn't funds for those kind of things. If I wanted to do speech and drama, I had to work towards that. So literally from the age of 12, I always did odd jobs. My father worked for people in Port Elizabeth. I used to pack shelves on a weekend. I remember going walking down and packing shelves on a Saturday afternoon and doing all things like that. And I think I've just always had a work spirit. And I can't imagine anything else. It's just who I am, and I'm happy and so grateful that it has taken me to this point. And the other thing is, I'm so grateful that the people who I've empowered along the way have got lives now. So many of my staff have been with me for 15, 20 years, and to have seen them work from just humble beginnings, and now they all have a better life. That's really rewarding. That's really rewarding. And I feel I've just been so lucky, and the community have been amazing. And, you know, someone once said to me, you can have a box of peaches and you can be the most delicious peach in the box, and someone may not like peaches. So I can't be everything to everyone. And I've learned that along the way. There's so many different options people have with catering and whatever. You can't be everyone's first choice. But I've built up a beautiful community of flavors, friends, and people who come back to me again and again. And I'm so grateful for that. But if I think back, I've always worked, and I think I told you before, I always used to do market research, standing on corners and doing interviews with people then. And I've just always had a work spirit. In Israel, I worked right through all my varsity years, and I've never begrudged it. I've never felt, oh, wow, I wish I could be a princess on a throne. I'm not that person. So I'm so used to hard work, and I feel really lucky. What can I say? I'm lucky to do what I do. And I always say I do such beautiful things, and I go the whole cycle of life with people. Sometimes a bris becomes, and 25 years later, I'm doing a wedding for that same person. You know, it's amazing. I'm now in the whole series of doing weddings for people I did bar mitzvahs for. And even I always say, not everything in life is beautiful and rosy and comfortable all the time. I do shiver meals and I do comfort boxes, and I'm there for the good and the bad and everything in between. And there's so many people who have been part of my, if I can call it, my tapestry of life in that way. And I feel really lucky. And every day we all have bad moods, we have bad moments, we have whatever. But I feel so lucky to be doing what I'm doing, being part of people's more happier moments. You know, I always say I go to beautiful functions. There's beautiful music. There's beautiful people. There's nice food. There's a beautiful vibe. What more? Is that not the best job in the world?
That's not going to the best office you could ever go to.
Exactly. It really is. And I often have to say, wow, I'm so lucky to be doing this, you know.
I just want to pick up on that one thing that you spoke about, the tapestry of life. Mm. I heard a saying once, which I thought was brilliant. They said, like, when you're doing a tapestry, you do it from the wrong way. So it's not the way that everyone sees. And when you're doing it, it looks like a complete mess. It's these little strings everywhere.
And threads.
And little threads hanging all over the place. Mm. And it's only when you turn it over that you can see the picture you're creating. And I think in life, we're living, as you said, we're creating the tapestry. We don't see the beauty that we're showing to others, which you've touched on, with affecting so many lives. Mm. And maybe that's kind of the picture that you're creating at
the
end.
For sure. That's amazing.
I want to take you back to, you said you started packing shelves at the age of 12 and doing surveys. Did your father help you get the job? Did you decide to do it yourself?
Can you think back? I always decided. I always decided to work and to do stuff. And I always did. I am a doer.
Mm. And did you go and did you knock on people's doors and say, can I help you?
Or yeah.
And at the, even at the age of 12?
Yeah, I had to. So I did.
And just you know? That lesson of when you said you had to, did you, were your parents open and saying, listen, if you don't earn your own money, you can't go to camp?
I think it was just there. I don't think it had to be put into words, you know.
Mm.
So, as I say, it just happened like that. And I'm happy for all those lessons I learned, you know. I don't know any other way. That's the truth.
Mm.
You know, I've always worked and I've always been a doer. And if I look, all the jobs I ever had turned into my own business somehow. So even my very first job when I came back from Israel and I came back to South Africa and I was a copywriter and I did work in ad agencies and a PR company, after a few months I went on my own. I think I'm that kind of a person. But I don't look at it as an entrepreneur really. I mean, if that's what this show is about. I think I just have that spirit of doing my own thing. I'm quite difficult. Believe it or not, you painted me differently, but I'm difficult, and I think I like things my way. So it's always been my way, and I've always made it my way. So yeah, that's where I am today.
So you are your own boss?
Yeah.
And is it easy or difficult being your own boss?
I think that the bigger a business gets, the more challenges you face. And sometimes I think, oh my word, I didn't ask for this. You know, wow, there's so much going on and so much on the business side, which I'm really not a business person. And sometimes I feel like I'm a logistics manager, just getting, you know, thank God I've got a great team and I've got people who think much more rationally than me. But I mean, when we're packing for a whole weekend of functions, I really feel like I'm a logistics manager, not a cook, truly. You know, so there's so many aspects to it. But sometimes I think, wow, this is bigger than what I ever imagined. I can't believe I'm in this position right now. And then sometimes I still feel that I'm just that young 22-year-old making one cheesecake in a kitchen, you know? So that's, but I think I tackle it as if it's a small business, if you understand what I mean. So it's personal and homey.
That's great. And I want to unpack that aspect of that. But if you just tuned in and you're thinking, who are we talking to? It's Dolores Fauché, owner of Food by Flavors, and we're going to unpack this after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're speaking to Dolores Fauché from Food by Flavors. And I can hear the passion in your voice when you're talking about all the different things you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me earlier that you lived in Israel for 8 years.
Yes.
Were you studying most of that time or were you working?
I was studying and then I did work, but most of it was studying. And I always worked through that also. I worked in a laundry. I worked as a waitress in restaurants, all sorts of odd jobs that students do. And I think I really did develop my sense of flavor and taste sensation and everything that I do, I think, is infused with those years from Israel. I think people can sense that in my presentation and in my flavors of what I do.
So I think it's great that you say that because I love your food. And I was thinking, I wonder why yours is so different. And I love the Israeli food. Mm-hmm. So I can feel that coming through.
Sure.
But I think greater than that, in any business that people do, it's everything that you do, you kind of bring a little bit of it into the next bit.
Absolutely. And I always say that. So as I told you before, I studied English literature. And it seems like I'm so far away from that now. But I'm truly not, because words and language and food and tastes, it's all part of an emotional language, a landscape. It's a certain way. And every day I think, wow, what I studied and what I did. And I love reading. I love books. I love poetry. And I think that every sense of what a person does edges towards the next stage. And it's the whole person that comes into that end result. So, and I'm not the person I was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and neither are my tables, and neither are my foodscapes, or neither you have to move also. But I do feel that nothing ever is a waste. Nothing you ever do in life is a waste. Every experience kind of builds to the to create the you that you are now.
So maybe your coffee shop that you will have, you can have a poetry
for
reading
sure.
with the food.
And that's my big dream, for sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
So then let's take it. Then you came back and you got into PR and you worked for a while with a PR company, and then you opened up your own PR company.
I did.
And then what? How did you move from there to catering? So I briefly said somebody asked you to do it. Just take us through the story.
So even throughout all those PR years and we did events, I would feel that my events did have that touch of the way I displayed something or the way I did a launch or the way I interpreted a client's brief. So I think that there's a natural kind of synergy between events and then getting into food. So it was an easy flow as such, but it wasn't really a business. So I would do an event and I would use other caterers, lots of other caterers for all my events that I was doing. And then one day someone would say to me, just do a platter for 20 people, a little business networking session. So I would do one platter. And then I always used to do my kids' parties a certain way because I truly love that. I love display and I love tables and I love feasts and I love color and I love those things. So I would always put extra effort into all those experiences. And then as you said, one day someone said to me, it was actually my neighbor, and she said, I want you to do my bar mitzvah for 300 people. And I said, are you joking? I don't even know how to do something for 300 people. She said, no, you do. And I did it. And that was the start, really, of functions as such. And slowly then, I had a parallel life of PR advertising and food. And then it started growing. And I started doing less and less of the PR and advertising. And it was a natural evolvement into one day I said, that's it. I'm only going to be doing this.
So that's a great lesson, I think, for a lot of people who are thinking of doing a business. A lot of people plan and then they resign from work. They give up everything they do even before they've tested the concept. And a lot of people fall flat because sometimes it does take time and sometimes it's not the right thing to be doing.
For sure.
So what you did is running both, and when the one grabs you more,
yes.
you can move to that. And it sounds like this whole catering business, actually, you didn't choose it. It chose you.
And I think it was Jordan Peterson who once said that you listen to end of year speeches of people and everyone says, follow your passion, follow your passion. And he says, no, find what you're really good at and let that become your passion.
Oh, wow.
I think that is what happened with me. If you had to say to me, 30 years ago, did you see this happening? I would have said never. I didn't see myself in this world, but it chose me in a way, and I love it, as you know. But I think when I heard that by Jordan Peterson, I just loved it because I thought that's it. You know, it's letting something that you know how to do well become your passion and your dream, and you sharing it with so many other people along the way.
But I think you only get good at something if you enjoy it. So it's
for sure.
If you enjoy it, if you're good at it, if you're terrible at something, you're never going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of mixed together.
For sure.
So you started doing and moving slowly into the other business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a lot of people out there who are in a similar situation now that you were then,
yes,
they kind of ask themselves, but how do you know if it's going to be successful? The most basic thing is pricing things.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know how to price something? So when somebody said, come and do this platter for 20 people or do a kid's party, the very first one for 300 people, did you make money from it? Did you lose money? How do you know how to price it?
I don't know where we make profit and where we don't. I just go with the flow. It sounds crazy, but I truly do. But of course there are market ceilings and market structures. So you've got to be realistic within a certain parameter, you know? So I think it's important to watch what the market is doing, watch what other people are doing. And you have to fit into that kind of groove, if you know what I mean. But I don't know where the profit comes from or where the food, where it makes money and where it doesn't. I do know that I definitely, now that I've got a bigger business, it works on volume. So I can't just rely on one cheesecake or one platter. There's a certain amount that I have to produce to cover my expenses and my staff and my premises and all of those items.
So just a quick lesson for you. So all of those things you've spoken about, that's what we call the fixed costs.
Okay.
And what fixed costs means that if you don't open your doors for a month, you will still have those costs.
For sure.
And for anyone listening out there looking at something similar, it's you have to have a certain volume just to cover those fixed costs. And then you need to make a profit. If the fish costs you R2, you've got to be able to sell it for R4 because you've got to cover those costs.
Yeah.
But you somehow obviously had some inner business sense that you didn't need to know the actual numbers, but you still made it profitable.
I think, I always say, I think I'm a shtetl trader. I feel at home, like thinking about, in fact, I recently went to Poland, which was an unbelievable experience. And wherever, in all the little villages, there was always a market square. And that's where the Jews traded. And I feel like I'm a trader. And I feel that's how I've really earned a salary and empowered other people. You know, so you have one table and you're selling 2 cheesecakes. And then the next week you sell 4. And then you need somebody to help you make 20. So you employ somebody. And if I think of it in those terms, and when I was standing in those market squares in Poland, I knew where I came from. It sounds so crazy, but I felt, wow, this is my heritage. I feel at home here. I could have traded here, you know? So I feel like I'm a trader, really. And I've been lucky in that, yes, thank God I've had the volume. And I panic when I don't. And not every month has volume. You know, you have the Omer, it's quiet. We had COVID. People forget about that. So we have all those external forces that you have to kind of work within. But I think for anyone wanting to start out but doesn't know how, just do it. Mm. Like, make that one item. I also know that the food industry is very demanding and very taxing on many levels. Your body, your stress, it's very stressful. It's a high stress industry. And I've seen so many people come and go, for want of a better word, because you have to have grit and you have to be able to take the good with the bad and you have to push through those hard times. As we say, those fixed costs, I love that, fixed costs. Okay, they're there whether you like it or not. So they're there. So, that's where I'm at now.
So maybe we should come up with the slogan of your cheesecake moment of, as you said, like, just make the cheesecake.
Yeah.
Like, just start doing it and see where it takes
and
you.
And I'm not only talking food, I'm talking anything, really. Like, sometimes you just have to try. But you do have to have some kind of a vision of where this can take you. I don't think, you know, if you know you have to earn a certain amount, if you know you've got kids at school and you have to pay those school fees and you've got rent and you've got certain things that you can't just have some weird dream and think, oh, well, I'm going to make it one cheesecake and it's going to cover that. So you have to put the hours in, you know.
So you mentioned a bit earlier of it's difficult and the COVID times. So can you think back on when was the most difficult time? Was there ever a time when you were doing this and you thought you're just going to give it up? And even if you didn't think you're going to give it up, was there a time that you faced difficulty, maybe COVID or other times, and how did you work through that?
I think, so COVID was this global experience, so you couldn't take it personally, but you had to deal with the reality on the ground. So when COVID hit, I had just actually, I think I'd almost just gone under the Beth Din. So I had other expenses. Or I think I went actually under the Beth Din during COVID, if I think about it. The first year, in 2020, somewhere around there. And I just remember thinking, well, I've got this premises. I have to pay for it. I can't give up. They were closing doors. I lost 14 functions. I remember in 3 minutes when the phone started ringing. I think it was the 26th of March, 2020. And everything just closed in on me. But I remember thinking, what am I going to do? And then I heard you could get that special I was like a, what do you call them?
A grocer?
Essential services.
Essential services.
Essential services. So, and I found, it was then called the Gourmet Grocer in Birdhaven. And that saved me a lot because, so what I started doing was packaging food. So
and selling it and at the Gourmet Grocer.
I sold it from my shop. We delivered. I didn't even have boxes. I remember going to the Spa Norwood there at the back and getting boxes and packing boxes of food. And then I got nicer boxes. Now we use proper boxes. But I remember it was so quick, everything. But I had to pivot and I had to turn. And I had people that were dependent on me also. And we just started doing boxes. And we were doing comfort boxes and shiver boxes. And then I invented the Shabbos box, by the way.
Okay, very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, that was the Shabbos box. And then I started packaging food and selling it in all different ways and at different places. And that saw us through. It saw us through COVID. And I did not get rid of one staff. I did not have to say goodbye to anyone, and I did not have to lose any staff. And I did get help from, there was one of the funds, I can't remember. It was through the Chev.
Mm.
It was an interest-free loan. I can't remember what it was called, but it was, and I'm not even ashamed to say I took it. I applied with the help of some of my friends, and I managed to put together the papers that showed that it was a Jewish business that needed to be saved.
Mm.
And I paid it back very quickly after COVID, but that did save me. I don't think I would have managed without it. I couldn't even pay electricity in the first month of COVID. Truly, it just everything crashed down and your doors closed. It's crazy. We've forgotten where we come from. We've forgotten.
I think that was the hardest time for businesses throughout, especially
for
when
sure.
you're running your own business.
For sure. But I think talking about challenging times, we all have challenging times. And so there are days, not that I say I'm going to give this up or, oh my God, I wish I could give it up or whatever. But there are days when I think, whew, how am I going to get through this? So it's those days. And also, I take things very personally and I love what I do. So if someone's not happy with something, or if I hear someone said something about one of my events that's not flattering or thing, I get wounded deep in my heart, you know. I take it personally. So I've learned that, as I say, you cannot be everyone's favorite peach, you know. But I take things very personally.
Mm. So I think maybe that's your strength and your weakness.
For
then.
Sure.
Because the strength is that you treat it that much, but when you treat it that lovingly, then you get hurt when somebody says something.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah. And just when you started, so you made your cheesecake and you got further. Mm-hmm. Do you remember, if you can think back, to employing your first person in the business?
Mm.
What was your thought process and how did you go about doing that? Because going from zero to one mm-hmm. is a huge move.
Huge. I do remember. So I remember I had domestics who worked with me in my home and I had taught them certain things. So in the beginning, they helped me. And then the business got a bit bigger. So I employed someone, just say someone in the road had a son who was working on the blue train, I remember in those days, and he needed extra money. So I got him in to make spring rolls, say. And then it was the next person. And then I remember doing a small bar mitzvah. And I arrived at this house and these lovely guys all came to help me offload my car and they were all freelance waiters and I just took a liking to them and I took them all in. So that's how really it happened. And they're all still with me, by the way.
How many years later is this?
Probably 17
wow.
years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I never take people who have actually been trained by other chefs or other cooks or other caterers. I take people who I can have an excellent waiter at a function and showing potential, and I'll then develop that person. And I've taken so many young people and taught them how to do so many different skills and tasks, and it's so empowering for them.
So you're making me think of a quote that I read, and I'm going to get the quote wrong, but it's something along the lines of, you should hire for attitude and
for
train
sure.
for skills.
Absolutely.
In other words, if you've got the right attitude, you can learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got the wrong attitude, even if you've got the skills, it doesn't help.
For sure. For sure.
And have you seen that play out
Absolutely.
In your business?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I think of one of the ladies who bakes for me. She came, so her sister was working for me, but not as a baker. And then I realized that this young lady had, she just had the hands and the heart for baking. And I'm not a baker, by the way. I prefer cooking. But and what she makes now is astounding. And probably, so it's taken 12 years, 13 years, but she's been with me for long. And she, as from a young girl, she's really developed into an amazing chef and baker.
So just unpack that for me, because in my mind, like, a baker and a cook is the same thing, and it's clearly not.
No.
Just
what's so for me, I prefer flavors and throwing things into pots and not measuring and creating tastes and flavors. Baking is more scientific. So it's more the accountant, I would say. No, so it's the accountant with heart, because you have to have a heart for baking. But what I'm saying is I hate measuring. It sounds crazy, but it drives me insane. So I prefer the cooking side, where if it's something says half a cup, if I'm following a recipe, I can just throw in what I think is half a cup. But with baking, you have to be more specific. So you have to measure your tablespoon and your cup of oil or your cup of yogurt or your flour, and you have to sift it. And I don't have much patience for that. So I prefer the grander cooking. I love making sauces and flavors and dressings and infusing flavors into things and chopping herbs over something. So that's what I love to do. But thank God there are people who prefer baking. So
listening to you, I think that I've just worked you out. I think you're actually an artist, and your art is with food.
Thank you.
We're going to look at what, excuse the pun, but we're going to look at what's your secret sauce. But after the break.
Thank you.
In service.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and I'm speaking to the divine, delicious Dolores Fauché. And that kind of, I think, sums you up and sums your food up. And it's food by flavors, and we're getting a sense of where the flavors come from. It's not it's not measured. You're creating some artwork, and then you're selling your artwork at all these functions, really.
That sounds very fancy, but yeah.
So, you know, before we went to the break, I said I'm going to ask you about your secret sauce. And what I mean by that is, other than what you've shared, or maybe going back on something that you've shared, kind of what do you think has made you successful?
I mean, you use the word successful. I don't look at myself like that. I just look at myself as, this is what I'm doing, and this is my gift that I've been given to share with people as such. But I think... And that's where I would say you have to have that passion, you have to love, and I think you have to care. I really care about everything that leaves my shop and that people, I care about every event that I do. I care deeply about it. I care that people are happy. I care that the client's happy. I think you have to care, and that my staff really care about each event. So I think when I say what's the secret, I don't think it's a secret. I think it's just there. I think you have to... Besides the passion and, as I say, the need, like I have to get up in the morning and put one foot in front of the other, and no matter how you're feeling or no matter what. I mean, look at the world at the moment. It's so we can crumble and curl up, you know, and shrivel, but we can't. We have to carry on. And I remember right after October the 7th, I think I had a bar mitzvah on October the 9th. And everyone was saying, what was going to happen? And we had to do it. We did that bar mitzvah. And people linked arms, and we sang, and we ate, and we enjoyed, and we rejoiced, because we have to, you know? So I think endurance is my, I think you have to endure.
Mm. And what would happen? Do you take holidays? Do you go away? What happens if you go away for a week? Or what's the longest you've been away? And how does it continue without you?
It does. I think that my staff love it when I'm away, but I think that I've really built up a great team. I trust them implicitly. So I don't go away for long periods of time. I've got two kids, one in America and one in Israel, and we all have occasions to go to. We have a friend's wedding, like my best friend's weddings in Israel. I've been to all of them. So I do try and go. I never am away for more than one weekend at a time. So I try and take a trip. If it is from a Wednesday to the next Wednesday, where there's one weekend in between. And hopefully it's not such a busy weekend. So obviously during quiet times, the Omero, different times, it's easier to travel. But there are things in life that happen that we have to go to and be at, and we should be. Like, we shouldn't be bound only by work. So I trust my staff so implicitly that they can do what we do without me. And yes, there's some people who want to see me at a function. I can't be everywhere. Even I can't be on a Sunday night. I can't be at three places sometimes. I try and pop into all three, but you can't always be at all three places. And I do a lot in Cape Town now. So when I'm in Cape Town with a certain team, so I take a team from here and we go to Cape Town. We truck everything down and we do certain events in Cape Town. There are other things happening in Johannesburg. It has to be able to be like that. Mm. Otherwise, I would never be able to do what we do and employ the people I do. And yeah, so.
So I asked that question with a purpose behind it. And the purpose is that when you're building a business, then you need to build something that can operate without you there.
For sure.
Otherwise, you just employing yourself, and to be a real business it needs to operate without you. But it sounds like you're getting there, even though you're not following any business model.
No, I've never followed business models, and I've never read any of those business books. I haven't got the patience to. I try to sometimes, so I prefer snippets of information. Like, I love getting things on Instagram or little pieces, or I love beautiful writing. So if someone sends me something that's to do with business or endurance or persevering or whatever, I love reading about those kind of things. But I've never read I always read those books that they say you should read, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and then The 7 Habits of Very Effective People. Or I've never read one of those books ever in my entire life. It's just not my thing. But I think for people out there who have dreams and visions and don't have a business brain or aren't accountants in their makeup or nature, you can still do it, but you do need to surround yourself with good people. So obviously I have an accountant who can do my forms, my taxes and whatever at the end of the year. You have to have that. But on a day-to-day basis, I don't have any systems, or I don't know percentages of things. I don't know how to mark up certain things. And that's where I say there's a market out there. You get a sense of what you should be charging. You get a sense of what people will bear and the prices out there. If a supermarket is selling a salad for 100 rand, you know that your homemade salad in that same size with much more ingredients and attention to detail and a delicious dressing can maybe sell for 170 rand. So that's what I'm saying. So yes, you learn that along the way.
So maybe you are doing the accounting thing of the markup and that, but you're doing it in a different way, in an artistic way. But you're still looking at that and making those margins.
For sure.
But you spoke about the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm thinking maybe we should write a book together. We'll call it The 7 Meals for Very Hungry People or something like that.
That sounds good. Yeah, a book is on my agenda. I just haven't been able to get around to finish it. But I would love to. I always say I want to do a book of all my favorite recipes so that I leave it for my children and grandchildren, and that there's something there after, you know, that there's something you leave behind with all those recipes.
So somebody once created a book where they took the recipes of everybody's boba that had been handed down and collated that.
That's amazing, yeah.
And I think maybe you should start doing some, because I think a lot of people would follow some of your recipes, although it's very hard to say, take a pinch of this and take a...
So when I do recipes, I try and give it to friends to make that dish so that I know that the ingredients work and that the quantities are right. Because I do give recipes, even on Chai FM when I do my show, and I do recipes and I do some demonstrations for different charity groups or whatever. And your recipes have to work. You don't want to give somebody something that doesn't work. So I do test it with other people.
That's great. So you mentioned that sometimes on Chai FM. When are you normally on Chai FM if somebody wants to listen in?
Oh, it's once a month on a Tuesday. I'm not sure which Tuesday because it's a bit erratic, but there are a few people who do the Essen Fressen show, and I'm one of them. So, yeah, we just share recipes. We talk to people about different things. So we have different themes and feels, and we just talk food. And yeah, I always say, even in these hard times and challenging times when we're looking at the world, people eat. And food brings comfort and makes you feel better. So as long as there's that, I'm okay, I think.
So maybe it's better that you S but not fresh.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And the problem is that your functions are fresh.
Good.
I want to taste everything.
I think that at functions, everyone lets their hair down a bit. And even the skinny brigade who say, oh, no, I'm not going to have dessert. They have a hot chip and then they have another one. And then you have a little brownie and then you have some ice cream. And that's just the way it is. But that's the way it should be. You know, you can't, your whole life, you can't deny yourself those pleasures.
Now, I've just been told by Craig that we have to go for another air break. So anyone listening to us, I'm talking to Dolores Fauché. You're listening to the Orchard Business Show. When we come back, I'm going to ask you a question, but I'll ask it after the break.
Okay. And I think it should be the non-business show with me.
The Ortjet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back to the Ortjet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and I'm talking to Dolores Fauché. Food by Flavors. I'm going to ask you about that name just now. But before then, I wanted to ask you, You create, as I said, so much that you can fresh, but there's often food left over.
Mm.
And you told me that you give it to charity. Can you just talk around, what do you do with all the food that's left over?
So I have a creche in Alex that they're very happy to collect anything. So often what's left over from a function doesn't look appealing, and it's not food that you can give to certain institutions or whatever, but I hate excess wastage. It's just so sad, especially in our country when there's so much and so many in need. But even just driving, I can take my car and fill my boot with leftovers and go down near Louis Botha, and I open my boot and in 1 minute everything's gone. So often we have fruit over or vegetables or salads or donuts or whatever. So if the creche can't fetch or don't want to fetch that week or whatever, then we fill our boots and just take it to people who need it.
Sure.
Yeah. There's always someone who does.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with the food. It's just you can't present it anywhere else. And often people think, I want the leftovers after a function. And no, I don't.
Mm.
You know. So we give decent leftovers to people, obviously to the client or whatever. And so many clients are so generous, and they say, we've got so much at home, we've had a beautiful night, we don't want more, please give it to someone who needs it, which is amazing.
And you know that you can give it to those people.
Yeah, yeah.
Just on that, how do you work out the quantities that you need? If somebody says, I'm having a function with 50 people, the biggest fear people have
is
going to run out of food. Mm. And the other side is what we've just spoken about, that you've got tons left over. Exactly. How do you work that out?
Again, we've kind of all learned that along the way. So yes, there are certain, you know, that if you've got meat and you work on 250 grams a person and you've got three meats, you can divide it across that. But I always have more because I'm that hysterical person who would hate to run out of anything at a function. So there are some scientific aspects to it, obviously, or mathematical aspects, should I rather say. But sometimes you just don't know. Like sometimes you can do an event and you can have so much salad left over, and sometimes it gets flattened in the first 10 minutes. So then you have to have backup. So I always do like to have backup, not made up, but that you've got it there, that you can create something. But we've learned along the way how to quantify, you know, how to do the dishes and how much meat to take or how much fish or hot chips or salad or whatever. So you learn that.
So I think that's a great lesson in business in general. You can know what to do, but things happen differently, and it's having a contingency plan, having a, as you call it, that backup plan.
Yeah, we call it backup. And I always say, have you taken backup? You know, so we have to have backup.
Yeah. And then the name of the Food by Flavors?
So that actually came, my friend Leanne actually gave me that name. So we were talking one day and I was saying, this is what I'm going to be doing and starting my business and whatever. This is when it became like a bit of a business as such, and not just the one cheesecake out of my kitchen. And she said, no one can flavor like you. So she said, please call it Food by Flavors.
Wow.
And that's really how the name came about.
That's wonderful.
It stuck, yeah. Yeah.
So we're starting to run out of time, which is like amazing. But can you give us a little bit of food for thought? And that is, if somebody young is listening to this, just some life lessons around being yourself or your work, or what life lessons would you give to a youngster today?
So I always look at young people, and I think that itself is just such a gift. When you're young and you're strong and your body's more able and you can take late nights a bit better, just youth is such a bonus in itself. But I think you have to balance your dreams and your visions, and to really know your inner being and to know your strengths and to know your weaknesses. Like, you would know that I could never be an accountant. So you have to know those things. So when you say, we talk about art, for sure I would always have ended up in something on the more artistic or more cultural or more that kind of world. That's my world. That's where I feel comfortable. That's where I fit in. So I think it's to know who you are and not have unrealistic expectations of who you are. I think you have to know yourself. But I think for young people, I would say, as an older person now, looking back, I think when you're young, you waste so much time worrying about fitting in, about what other people are thinking of you, about certain societal pressures, and are you good enough? Are you pretty enough? Are you rich enough? Are you thin enough? And I think that as you get older, you realize that what really matters is just your connections with people and the few people in your life who are there for you. My son in LA, he always calls it your sure connections. You know, so I think we all need sure connections in life. And I think that having, I call myself a small business, but having my little business, I think I have sure connections with people around me, suppliers, customers, staff. I think you have to have those connections to build any kind of business. So that would be my life lesson.
Wow. So you're talking about connections with people. You call it sure connections. And even you talk about your suppliers as if they're family. And I think you've kind of summed it up in a very nice way, that you look at you looking at business as living, not as something
Absolutely.
Outside of your life.
For sure.
And so you're looking at like this tapestry that we spoke about.
Mm.
And your connection, the people you deal with are family. You care about every single function that's on, because mm-hmm. it's you. You're giving a part of yourself
For sure.
to everything. And I get that sense even in this interview. I feel like You've given
thank
the
you.
Whole you into this interview.
Thank you.
So I really want to thank you for that.
It's been a pleasure. I hope it can be of little benefit or some benefit to anyone listening out there.
I'm sure it is.
Thank you. Thank you
and
so much.
And I'm David Zeidel. This is Dolores Fouché, and you've been listening to the Autjet Business Show.